Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
ELC. Yeah! Wow! It is! When that voice pops in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, oh, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you are one of our geeks and sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or, hey, maybe you're putting up the holiday decorations. Maybe you're walking the dog. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. They, through their generosity, their goodwill, and their support, make sure that DLC continues. And in exchange, they get some cool stuff, including completely ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a cubic mind-blowing ton of bonus content, including our usual Wednesday midweek goofball show we call Paid DLC. It's with Lana Bashinsky joining myself and Christian Spicer, talking whatever nonsense comes up during the middle of the week. Unstructured, wacky, weird, but also you get bonus spoiler chats like we just did for God of War Ragnarok. You can find that on the RSS for patrons. And the Friday show, Feeling This, where Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talk about the feelings behind games, classic, current. It's great stuff, and it's all bonus content for our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. This show, DLC, the main show, is all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That spells with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who is absolutely stuffed full of tofurkey, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. I actually did a, we went out with my family. I was in Texas, as people from last week's show might recall. I had a cauliflower was like the main. It was like a cauliflower steak that was...
They allow that in Texas?
I mean, I flew it in, from Oregon, actually. So
it was
like,
it Austin? Was it Austin?
No, Houston. It was Houston.
Oh, I went out. Look at that.
We met up with some friends, too, and we crashed their place the day before Thanksgiving. Like, yeah, we'll get takeout for y'all. Come on over. And I was like, thanks, buddy. But remember, I am a vegetarian. And he's like, yeah, still come on over.
Well, he's pot committed at that point. You know,
yeah, I mean, the invite had been sent.
Can't disinvite you now. You know?
Yeah, yeah. He tried. He was like, this is my new address. And it was like one digit off, you know, and we had to find it.
he just gave you next door and you're just looking over like, hey, isn't that you? not a very good throw off. Anyway, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We are grateful that you are here. We have a huge show to talk about. You know, it's a holiday weekend. However you happen to celebrate Black Friday is up to you, but we have lots to talk about, and we have one of our favorite guests to do that with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian, but this week, once again, DLC stands for Delight Lifted from Chaos, because from Jeff Grubb's Game Mess, and also one of the preeminent members of the International Association of Gaming Jeffs, it's right. Jeff Grubb back on the show. Hey, Jeff. Woo.
Hey, guys. I'm glad to be back. How's it going? How you guys all doing? You guys recovering from Thanksgiving and Black Friday? You guys actually, you know what? Do you guys get any deals? Do you guys buy any new TVs, like a 6th, 7th TV at this point?
I was tempted by a TV deal. There was a pretty good LG TV deal. I showed it to my wife. I was like, we could get the 83-inch. And she's like, no. Yeah. And I was like, okay. Yep. But I did get a couple of small things. Just, you know, it's Cyber Monday coming. You know, you just try to get the deals.
That's where I'm at. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, if a deal crosses my path, who am I to say no? That's just fate at that point.
Agreed. Christian, any deals?
I bought some clothing. My favorite deal articles now at this point is like the grizzled old Black Friday, Cyber Monday veteran are the articles, like the listicles that are like, these are the things that are really deals. You know, because it's like it's like, that's not a deal. It's like, no. These are like the real honesty. And then you read through the list and it's like, oh, well, I don't really want any of it. But I'm glad to know that there are real deals out there and not like that. This is the TV. Get this TV for whatever hundred, you know, whatever. And then you're like, you look up the model number and it's like only sold on Black Friday. And you're like, oh, you got me. You outlet scored me.
The way I do it is that the things that I've been meaning to buy, I'm like, well, I'm going to see if there are a huge discount. Like extra SD card. Yeah, I'll buy that on Black Friday because it's probably going to find a good deal. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those SD cards. So then they really drop on Black Friday. I know they'll be cheaper again next Black Friday, but I need it now. So I'm going to get it now. And then I was happy with that choice.
You'll fill it up between now and next Black Friday, and you won't know what's on it. You won't know what you put on it in that year.
I know, yes.
Well, happy Black Friday to you and yours. Happy Cyber Monday, everybody. Really
yes, absolutely.
We've got tons to get to, so let's start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We also love hearing from you for all sorts of reasons. Just, you know, high fives are cool or whatever comments or questions you want to send our way. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send them. Also, why don't you check out one of our cool communities? You can check out our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. And the Discord, which is also a fantastic place full of really cool people. You can find that 5x5DLC on Reddit, or on Discord as well. In fact, I want to mention some of the fine folks that run our Discord are organizing the annual Game of the Year voting. And I want to talk about the Game of the Year from the listener's perspective. So get over there on the Discord and vote for Game of the Year when that goes up. That voting will take place throughout the month of December. All right, Jeff, you are our guest. You get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with Pokemon Scarlet and Violet being the fastest selling Nintendo games ever, which I think by the transitive property of Nintendo being bigger than everyone else does make it the fastest selling game through a 3-day period. I kind of think it might be. I'm wondering, like, did a Grand Theft Auto do upsell it? But I don't think so. I think this might be the fastest selling game period of all time through a 3-day period. So 10 million copies. It doesn't get much bigger than that. That is just, I'm someone who pays attention to numbers a lot of times. I don't know. I think it's like these companies are so secretive. I have a fun time looking at the numbers because it's like, okay, we can work backward from here's why they make these decisions, right? That these games sell so well and then we get more of them and these games tend to trail off and we don't get more of them. All right, big surprise. I think it's safe to say we might get more Pokemon after this.
I think people still want the Pokemons. Yeah.
It's the kind of thing where, okay, they've been building this brand now for 25, 30 years almost. And it's done the kind of, maybe only a handful of other properties have really done this. Star Wars, maybe. I mean, obviously Pokemon's bigger in terms of a sheer amount of money spent on it than anything else. Number one, it is number one on that front, but it has done so by constantly bringing in new children all the time without losing too many of the children it did attract 20 to 30 years ago. Like all those fans are still showing up. And then on top of that, now you have this new generation of their kids showing up and soon their grandkids, it feels like. So it's really just kind of ballooning and it's exponential growth and it's paying off for them right now with a game outselling any other Nintendo game ever. That's incredible.
It really is. I mean, 10 million in 3 days is astronomical. Sony was crowing about God of War Ragnarok, and rightfully so, selling 5.1 million copies, you know, biggest first party exclusive in Sony's history. And Nintendo's like, hold my beer, you know?
Yes. Mike,
well, you know why, though, Jeff, right?
What's that?
Because they did God of War Ragnarok and not God of War Scarlet and God of War Violet. Like, that's right. The problem.
That's what I want to ask. Like, do you guys consider – is it a cheat? Is it, you know
– a little bit.
I'm sure a lot of people buying both SKUs, right?
Yeah, but I mean, at the end, the money's all green. if Sony could get away with selling two versions of Ragnarok to people, they would have done it.
They can, right?
Because it's not
God
Pokemon.
Of War Rag and God of War Rock.
Rock. That's what the N is there. It's N Rock. It's like, yeah, you get them together. I mean, like, people are buying that two pack. I was like, I went on my eShop to buy the game. And the first thing I clicked on was the two pack. I'm like, $120? What the heck? And it's like, okay, yeah, people are going there and buying both, but that's just them figuring it out, making it work. But there's no way that 10 million number is just, 5 million people buying it twice. It is.
Right. No, you're right.
Somewhere right. Between. But still, it's like pretty impressive stuff, regardless of how they get there.
I agree. The other thing about them getting there is that this is in the face of every review talking about the massive performance problems on the Switch. That's not insignificant as well. I mean, it seems to have ignored all of that. And I think that would have put off a lot of people if it was literally any other IP, but people are playing through it.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of thing where we see this frequently, and it's the next game, right? The next game that pays. And the thing with Pokemon is, the next one will be a remake or a remaster of some older franchise older version of these games that people will be like, well, listen, I wasn't here for that game that was broken, or I did buy it and I was disappointed, but this game is a remake of one that I know I loved. It's a remake of Black and White. Well, I got to be there for that. But you know, the next time they come back around 2 years from now and there's a new generation, it's probably gonna be broken again. I won't buy it then, but they'll forget because they'll just keep buying these other Pokemon games and get excited about the next one all over again. But the next one could pay a little bit for this if it's broken in a similar way. Just chances are it won't be, because it will be some other version of Pokemon where it is one of those remasters instead.
Christian, you are a much bigger Pokemon fan than I, and I know your daughters are as well. I think my son is just getting it. He literally asked for the Pokemon Advent calendar this year, and I was like, there's a sign. There's a sign of things to come. I just don't think he's aware of Scarlet and Violet yet. But I notice that neither of these games is on your playlist this week. Is that because of the performance issues, or just, you know, holiday, or are you staying away from this one?
Yeah, I'll probably talk more about it come our end of the year conversation. But I did not get an early copy of this game, which there's a lot of games we don't get early copies for. But I had a friend who did and was like, hey, you might want to wait on this. I know you like Pokemon. And I am of the age where I think the things that the issues that plague it, I think would bother me. Like, I think what's interesting about the issues to the game is I have not played it, but friends who have, I truly don't think they impact the basic gameplay loop of the game that much. Like, what you're doing in Pokemon doesn't require 60 frames per second. It doesn't require like excellent draw distances. Like, the loop of that game, yeah, it'd be nice to be able to see a Pokemon far away, you know, before you walk up to it and not have shadows glitching in and out. But I think for a lot of people that find the enjoyment in that game, the issues with it don't detract from it the way that the issues with Cyberpunk when it launched on console for a lot of people detracted from that core gameplay loop. But for me, I think those issues would be enough to detract my joy from it. And then my kids haven't asked for it yet. So it was this nice sweet spot of too many games and knowing the game had those issues that made it an easy pass for me. But I think the interesting thing about this story, as an elder statesman of gaming, I remember when games got stickers put on them for being a million seller, you know, back in my, the game sold a million
stickers.
Yeah. I mean, it was like trumpets, you know, like million sell. And now it's like,
that's still a big deal. Selling a million copies.
Most games, a million is really good. Yeah. I mean, like, if we try to attach the old record selling metric to it, it's like, you know, million wouldn't be a platinum, but it'd be like a gold. That's like a gold record. That's like still pretty good. I mean, platinum, you're talking like 10 million these days. And then for whatever the level of diamond, I guess, 15 million. Very, very few games get
Taylor
above 15
Swift
million.
Only. It's just Taylor Swift. Like, no one hits
exactly.
That.
Yes, Taylor Swift and then Spider-Man, Miles Morales. That's about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I know you already mentioned this, Jeff, but just to underscore it one more time, the thing that blows my mind is since 1996, mainline Pokemon video games have outsold the previous one every single time.
Yeah.
That's just incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. And there's kind of no other explanation other than it's just universally appealing, right? The character designs and the mechanics, the music, and the whole just the fundamental capture concept. People just, it just strikes a chord with humans in some way. And from the very, like when a kid first sees it, they're like, oh no, yeah, I get this and I know it and I want to know everything about it. And then the game does the thing where it's like, oh, you're a kid who wants to know everything about this in a way that even your parents couldn't understand. Kids love that stuff. And this game gives it to them in spades, where it's just like, there's a million tiny little mechanics and you could be the master of this universe and you could tell everyone in the world about it and they won't understand because you're special. You get this. And that stuff lasts forever, builds a lifetime a bond between this property and people. And clearly it has not broken for most because they go in, they just keep buying it. So
yeah,
it's impressive stuff.
While there are exceptions to this, I'm certain, but as an IP, it is one that has been respected throughout its type of other properties, you know, like the t-shirts and the figures and the films and the TV show, like the external property of Pokemon, where, you know, it was Katy Perry doing the first title track off of the Pokemon anniversary album, like big artists celebrating this stuff. And the merch is always done very well. Like, it never went through the slumming it years of quick cash in stuff. Again, I know there are exceptions, but it's a brand that has held its value over this lifetime, which is hard for, I think, IPs that last this long to do. I mean, people were still excited to follow every time Ash would come back into the mainline cartoon. Like, will he achieve his dream? You know, like, it's comforting and nostalgic, but also, as Jeff mentioned, it keeps building a new fan base on top of that too, which is really interesting. So many other things that my kids are into now, I find that they are riffs on things that I was interested in. You know, it's become meta. Like, they like the thing that pokes fun at the thing that I liked or whatever. And Pokemon continues to build on its own base in a really fascinating way.
Pokemon, you know, as Jeff Grubb mentioned, I mean, it's like Star Wars, Marvel, Pokemon. I mean, that's in that pantheon, you know?
Yeah, there's a few other things like it. This game's seems like it's going to sell like 30 million copies when it's crazy. Done, like something like, I kind of don't know how you have this start and don't get to like at least 25 million. There's only a handful of games that have done that. And a couple more on the Switch, like, you know, Animal Crossing and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and Zelda Breath of the Wild is getting there if it's not already past 25 million. But that's, I mean, there's not much more than that. And this game's going to get there.
Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
My story of the week, there's a lot of good stories, but the thing I want to bring up as we are approaching this end of the year time, the look back and stuff like that, and people are creating their lists and the game awards are, you know, on the precipice, they're coming and all of those announcements. Time Magazine has announced its top 10 games of the year. And I find outlets as large as Time or as, you know, general.
An outlet as large as Time.
What song? What's this?
Not as game specific as Time Magazine is doing their list is always going to be divisive, right? There's any list, there's going to be that controversy. But the reason, Mr. Kanata, I specifically want to bring this list up is because at number 8, and we'll go through the whole list, but at number 8, they listed Resident Evil Village, Shadows of Rose, which, Mr. Kanata, it's DLC, baby. It is.
You are sullying the story of the week segment for your own purposes. This is how you've stooped so low, Spicer.
No. I'm saying that I was doing it. Well, I am ahead of my time. I am saying
you're literally ahead of time.
ahead of actual time.
No, well, Mr. Grubb, the reason I want to bring this up, and I do think it's a fascinating conversation, and Kanato, you and I have had this.
By the way, this is from the guy who has repeatedly said people's top 10 lists are ridiculous and we shouldn't even award games of the year. Who has literally forced me to rename our game of the year favorites of the year because he doesn't think there's such a thing as game of the year.
Mm-hmm. I stand
now
by
he
that.
Wants to spend an entire segment on
Let's do it.
Time. Okay, go ahead, Christian.
I will stand by that favorite of the year, and I stand by everything else. The reason I think that this leads to an interesting conversation, and one, Mr. Kanata, you and I have had time at times dabbled in here or there, and I'm curious to get Mr. Grubb's opinion on it, is the idea of what game of the year is now in terms of, and I know the Game Awards has created the best ongoing game and best expansion to a game, but Resident Evil Village, Shadows of Rose, is a meaty DLC. We've had meaty DLCs before. Destiny 2, The Witch Queen was this year. Witch Queen? Was that this year's? Was this year's. And like Fortnite Season 8 or, you know, whatever. And I think it's fascinating as games continue to evolve what should or should not be considered your best gaming experience, you know, perhaps, or what best game of the year should be in terms of what that conversation is. And so I like using something like here when I saw this Time Magazine saying, oh, this feels like a shift in that general consensus of what quote unquote game of the year can be when it is included in this is a expansion for another game. And I'm curious if we'll see other major outlets, you know, go down that path. And Mr. Grubb, I know at Giant Bomb, there has always been a long legacy of debate as to games of the year and also what qualifies as a game of the year. And I'm curious kind of what your feelings are on that and if they're shifting at all as we, you know, round out 2022.
Yeah, I think we had the beginning of this conversation recently because we were like considering some of these questions. And we've basically arrived at, we're just going to kind of let in everything at this point. Old games, it can be your game of the year again, if it's a live service game especially, but kind of, I mean, if you make an argument for it, we'll hear it out at this point. And I think that's kind of where you need to be, because you're right, games have changed so much. I think that when you look at something like, okay, well, Fortnite came out as this product and then changed into Fortnite Battle Royale. And at that point, it's like, okay, this is a whole other just kind of mode inside of a game. And we're letting that stand on its own. And obviously it does stand on its own. Well, okay, well then what's the game there? Well, it is whatever you go there to play. And if you just go there to play a new mode that drops in something that's one of your favorite games and that mode is new to this year, if you call that your game of the year, I think that's 100% right at this point. It's hard to argue with that because of the way games have changed away from products so severely. And it's a bit fair too, because that's what developers are putting their efforts into. That's what they are spending their time on re-upping games that you are already into, you are already spending a lot of time with. And I kind of want to, I don't want to discount that. I want to include that and make that feel like that. It's not just part of the conversation. It is the conversation in gaming right now. That is what they're putting out. That's what we're playing. There's no reason to ignore it.
I don't disagree with any of that. I think that is absolutely a defensible position and a justifiable position. And yet, I find myself bristling at this notion of an expansion as being a game of the year. It feels like there is some distinction there that, and maybe I'm just old, and maybe that's what it is, and stuck in an old paradigm. But I feel like if there's a release that came out this year that relies on another release to work, then it's not a game of the year. It's a different thing. And I hate to be so pedantic about it, but I kind of feel like, is nothing sacred?
I get that. But also at this point, it's just, it does feel like, well, at a certain point, a year could come along here where all the games I play are just added, like stuff added on to things I was already playing.
Yeah.
And it's like, I kind of don't want to be the person standing in front of the train of time as it runs over me, not like relentlessly.
Stand in front of the train of time.
Is there like, it needs to be able to be a quote unquote boxed copy. So like,
I don't agree with that.
Not box copy, but I mean like a standalone release. So like Uncharted, right? Like Lost Legacy was expansion for Uncharted 4, but you could also buy just Lost Legacy. You didn't have to buy Uncharted 4 or Miles Morales.
Standalone.
Standalone.
That's what I don't know. I think it's a different category, you know, I don't know. It's like French fries aren't the best sandwich I've had all year. You know what I mean?
Have you tried putting them between two other French fries? Between two French fries.
No, I always eat my French fries.
They are games at this point. We do get in a lot of trouble when we try to put these things into boxes and categories. Jeff Keighley's thing, I'm going to watch it. I've been entertained by it pretty frequently over the last couple of years. I'm fine with what it is. As a voter trying to figure out what the best action adventure game is versus the best action game.
Yeah.
I'm way over that. Like these genre awards are completely broken at this point. Sifu is obviously in there as best fighting game or one of the best fighting games as a nominee. It's not even a fighting game. It's just broken. We should just.
Well, it has zero adventure, Jeff. I don't know if you, when you played Sifu. Adventure in Sifu.
I like the best PlayStation game, you know, or like best Xbox game. It's what even is that?
That's so, like the best Harper Collins book. Like, are you nuts?
Exactly.
We have a lot of weird stuff that happens when we try to put this stuff, these things into boxes. So I'm kind of leaning away from that in general to the point where I'm like, if Game of the Year comes and someone's to argue that their favorite game was a DLC, I don't have a great argument against that anymore. That's kind of where I've fallen.
I agree.
I do wonder if I know that in cinema and TV, there are very rigid rules about what qualifies and what doesn't. But it's like at some point, is episode 4 of the last season of Stranger Things, which is an hour and a half, the best movie? Because what a movie it was. The fact that it was in the middle of all of this stuff is shifting. I'm going to read this list real quick because we have talked about it. 10 was Shredder's Revenge. 9, Lego Star Wars Skywalker Saga. 8, as mentioned, the Resident Evil Village Shadows of Rose. 7, Sifu, zero adventure in that game. I'll say it again. 6, The Last of Us Part 1, which is interesting as well as a remake qualifying and in consideration. 5, Stray, which also got a lot of game awards noms. Elden Ring at 4, The Quarry at number 3, which I feel like is there just to get clicks and debate for why it was higher than Elden Ring. Number 2, Horizon Forbidden West, and number 1, God of War Rag. God of War Rock did not make the list, oddly enough.
Completely separate
product. That's Time Magazine's 10 best games of the year.
I'll say that's a pretty good, broad top 10 list. from a publication like Time, that totally sounds about right.
I think a lot of people would be upset, as you mentioned, Christian, about Elden Ring being so far
down. Because that's just actually wrong. It's just straight up wrong, but it's Time Magazine. Fine. This is fine.
Yeah.
Chat mentions Mario Kart 8 Deluxe new tracks should be considered. Yes.
Well, I think consider it at this point.
That's
but
a whole game.
You are going to have an uphill argument. We're going to go do our giant bomb game of the year thing. Dan Riker brings that. He's going to get shouted down. No one's going to really hear them. I think that Kanadi, your concern here will be borne out in that when people say, okay, well, my favorite thing is DLC, they're going to have a hard time arguing. If you put it on your personal list, well, at that point, there are no rules on a personal list.
Right.
But if you're in a room with other people and that's the argument you want to make, I think it's going to start from, behind the rest of the pack a little bit when you go, so what's part of this other bigger game? And here's why it stands on its own, even though it literally does not stand on its own. But if a DLC does rise above that, clearly it's deserving, I think, at that point.
If anyone can push those Mario Kart tracks across the line, it is Dan.
Yeah,
so I look forward to Dan getting.
I shouldn't tempt fate. You're right.
I just don't want to encourage Christian when it comes time for our shows.
That's a good point. I'm sorry about that.
I'm going to get a whole list of. It's going to be my fifth favorite game is going to be one mode from Witch Queen. The fourth is going to be that one strike I did with Anthony from Witch Queen.
Yeah, it's all a mess. He's literally turning ours into a game mess, Jeff. It's not
honestly the game of the year is still Pacifism from Geometry Wars 2 or whatever it was today. So yes, I'm right there with you.
All right. Well, my story of the week, you guys, I don't think this is actually the story I'm most interested in this week, but I have two smart people here and I want to talk about it with you guys because I find this whole negotiation slash litigation with the government trying to avoid monopoly and getting this acquisition approved. Fascinating. It is ongoing. This is, of course, I'm referring to Microsoft attempting to acquire Activision Blizzard. And evidently, this week, the UK government deemed it prudent to release the full argument to the public. This is the full argument that between Xbox and PlayStation, arguing PlayStation side as to why Xbox should not, or Microsoft should not be allowed to acquire Activision Blizzard. And Microsoft saying, yes, we should. And it's odd that we get to see this stuff because it is very much it is at odds with the public PR gamer-facing versions of messaging that you see. But basically the idea here is both companies trying to minimize their ability to be successful. Look at us. We're a small, tiny little company just trying to make it today in this wacky world. But oh man, Microsoft's so big and scary and will be even bigger and scarier with Activision Blizzard. And Microsoft on the other side going, oh no, Sony is the ones who are amazing. We're just scraping by here. It's fascinating. The pull quotes here, Microsoft saying that Call of Duty players are neither unique nor special, that Elder Scrolls 6 is a quote mid-size game. Meanwhile, PlayStation is like, oh, Xbox Game Pass is crushing us, significantly ahead of PS Plus. Jeff, I'm sure you've talked about this on your content. Are we to make anything of this, or is this just posturing that really was never meant for our eyes?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we need to remember that these companies have a lot of lawyers who have a lot to do here, where they need to prove, like, why are we paying you all so much all the time? Well, they're going to throw every single trick they can possibly think of right now. This is when their money's going to be made. And so it's not too surprising that every chance they get, they do their most to put themselves in the best position as possible. So yeah, it's posturing. It 100% is. I think what we can kind of glean from this is that this deal is very important to both companies, on the PlayStation side that it not go through, on the Microsoft side that it does go through. The kinds of things that we're hearing in the press and now in these filings are things that we have never really heard from these companies. They go to such great lengths to avoid answering questions in these ways and to talk about their competition and talk about themselves in these ways. And now they're doing it repeatedly every day for months now. And it's, oh, the only reason they're doing this is because this is the biggest deal in the history of gaming, in the history of the world. Right. And so both these companies have a lot, and we know why. Obviously on the Microsoft side, having Call of Duty would be huge. Having King would be even bigger. And on the PlayStation side, they talk about PlayStation Plus. That's the number one mover of PlayStation Plus, is I want to play Call of Duty online with my friends. They do not want to lose that. They don't want to lose, they'd also hate the idea of, well, we make $10 or we make $3 for every $7 that we sell of Call of Duty on our system going forward. And we send that $7 over to Microsoft. That's a bit upsetting to them. And then when they want to go negotiate, they got to go negotiate with Microsoft now. And they hate the idea of that. Because again, like they move a lot of PlayStation Plus, and they had a deal with Activision where they gave a little cash on the side to Activision for helping them sell so much PlayStation Plus. And now that money's going to go to Microsoft, and Phil Spencer's going to go there with a big grin on his face. They hate the idea of that. I don't blame them. I've been for a long time been like, how does this deal not go through? It is very hard to argue that it is anti-competitive when it's clearly that this is a move by a company that's trying really hard to compete. And then on the other side, Sony can be like, oh yeah, well, we're gonna have a hard time competing, but Nintendo does exist. And I know they talked about that and brought that up in these filings, but Nintendo does exist without Call of Duty, and that's such a prime example. How do you argue against that? But I don't know. It does seem like the tide is building a little bit, where the FTC reportedly is going to look into this as well, and maybe is going to bring a suit. That hasn't been voted on, but that seems to be the way things are going. And at a certain point, maybe Microsoft does say, it's not going to go through. Maybe it's not worth it. Maybe we need to pull out, in the same way that NVIDIA did with ARM. I don't think that's going to happen. I still think it's going to go through. But it's getting interesting in a way that it feels like it could fall apart a little bit more. And all other ways, it's getting kind of less interesting, because it's just the same thing over and over again. These two companies just being like, hey, we don't even know how we got here. Mr. Magoo is in charge over here, and we just blindly ended up spending $69 billion to buy a company. And PlayStation's like, we don't even know how this is all luck. We had nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
And really, we need everything we can going forward. It's pretty wild to hear them talking this way.
It is. I mean, you know, hearing Sony say stuff like, you know, Battlefield franchise is just garbage. You know, just, you know, we're just suffering. All we have is, we would have is Battlefield. It's, yeah. It's impossible to, you know, it's very, very, it's very funny.
They own Bungie too. Like, that's a weird thing. Like, they're like, yeah, we can't, shooters. This is just for the 18 plus shooters. Call of Duty owns that. That's not a genre. There's no such genre as the 18 plus shooters. That's just a narrow, that's such a lawyerly way of thinking about it, right?
It's like, listen,
we
got
to find a way to distinguish it from all other games. Well, it is like basically the only 18 plus shooter that sold 400 million copies. Like, okay, 18 plus shooter. That's how we're going to talk about it. No one has ever been like, my favorite type of games is 18 plus shooters. That's wild.
Right. Yeah. I hate those 17 year old shooters.
Yeah, you know? Right. What a weird thing.
Christian got to have their segment. I only play creature collectors that have sold more than 10 million units.
Exactly.
Like, that's my.
Yeah. Yeah. It's your niche. Yeah.
That's where I live. Yeah.
Christian, you are a former lawyer. Former writer of weird documents such as these, and I'm told that your legal advice can actually still be followed to this day.
Yes, as actual legal advice, because I think what's fascinating about this is from the outside, and we are seeing a lot of what's going on at the inside. I think from the outside, this seems fascinating because I truly feel like this was a surprise for everybody. Jeff Grubb mentioned that a little bit here, but I feel like, you know, Phil Spencer saw this opportunity as Bobby was, you know, running into some big important issues at Activision, and Activision share price kind of tumbled, and Microsoft is being very aggressive, and Phil seems to have the full backing of Microsoft to go and do these things. And from all accounts, at the time, it came together very quickly, and especially in terms of deals this large coming together. And I think it blindsided a lot of folks. And that's why you're seeing a lot of this scrambling happening and going on and trying to pull things together. And, you know, Sony thought they had this long-term deal locked down with Activision and Call of Duty being a marquee title for them. I think it's interesting that it's getting this much attention, whereas, like, how many times has HBO and Warner Brothers been sold in the last three God, years, right. Yeah. You know? And, like, maybe there's more players in the entertainment space, but most of those players are owned by three businesses, and you don't hear about those being as big of being checked on as monopolies in terms of scrutiny, at least when they were happening. And I think too, if you broaden this, if I'm Microsoft and they've done some of this, what you're really talking about is entertainment or competition for eyeballs or time. And to say that Microsoft is anywhere close to a monopoly on that, when what as Netflix had said before, their biggest rival is TikTok, you know, like not, or Netflix's biggest rival is Fortnite. Like, all of these markets are very vague. And I think Microsoft is going to keep pushing the boundary of who their market really is and what they're competing against. And it's not Sony. You have the direct competitors of Nintendo and even Valve, I think, to some extent. Now that they are more in the hardware space as well. It's hard to argue that Steam isn't very successful, and they don't, you know, they don't need to publish their own games in the same way to sell their hardware and have a very profitable business. And so I think you might see some people in the US government here try to get some sound clips, you know, as they stand on the floor and make some speech about this, that, or the other and have their moment go viral. But it still really feels like this thing is full steam ahead and just a matter of time until it closes. But that $70 billion amount has certainly increased,
yeah,
on legal fees alone at this point. But it's
Jeff,
going
do
through.
You do you think that there's any possibility of any fallout with regard to the individual publishers when they read some of these sort of less than flattering comments, or do you think everybody kind of understands the game that's being played?
Yeah, like they're catching strays, right, a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that a little bit, but these guys, they all have each other's numbers. They all talk a lot. They all, and they kind of know what's happening here. Andrew Wilson might be a little frustrated that you know, Jim Ryan's, you know, team is saying that, but really, like, they're most interested in making money. I mean, I remember when Halo released early, I heard stories about Andrew Wilson getting on the phone immediately and be like, listen, we are going to sue you because we have a deal for Battlefield and all this stuff, and you're really screwing us over. And it's like that's the kind of stuff they care about, is like when they have deals that get crossed. Here, yeah. Like there's no deal being betrayed. They're just maybe looking a little, they're being, you know, kind of put down a little bit, but also everyone gets it. Yeah. I'll just like, when it comes to trying to figure out or trying to read the tea leaves on regulators here, on its face, it is a little bit weird because gaming is extremely competitive right now. And it's competitive to the point where if we think about where the next $100 billion game is going to come from, like if I rack my brain, it's probably not going to come from Microsoft or PlayStation. It's going to probably come from some small studio, more than likely making a mobile game. But if not a mobile game, some weird new live service game or a weird new survival game on Steam that starts as early access and just takes over the world. Yeah. In a world where that stuff has not just happened like once or twice, but happens repeatedly over and over the last 10 years, it's hard for me to be like, okay, well, this is going to change the competitive landscape in some permanent way. Microsoft having Call of Duty. It just doesn't really register in my mind that way. If anything, you know, the people that are Activision right now, that own shares and be able to take this payment from Microsoft, they'll probably stay there for a little bit, but they're probably all going to go start their own studios outside of Microsoft in the next couple of years that will then also probably get acquired 10 years from now for a lot of money. Yeah. And that's the system working. It's kind of, I mean, if we're going to live under capitalism like this, and we don't have any other choice, this is what the system looks like when it's actually functioning, as sort of, I think off-putting it is at first to be like, oh wow, they spent how much money to take over that thing? That makes me feel weird, but I don't know. This is what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah. Yeah. The next $100 million game is from Second Dinner. I played it. It's called Marvel Snap.
Oh, boy. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, boy. I cannot stop. I stopped to play Pentiment, and then I went right back, and I can't stop playing again.
That game, yeah, that's... people,
you tell,
are
that's
like,
made up that Blizzard magic, right? Where it's, yeah, like, and that's, yeah. I mean, that's honestly, that's an example. Blizzard is not Blizzard anymore.
Exactly. But
Blizzard still exists. They're just out there, and there are all these other teams. And
Blizzard magic.
They've left. They have their own studios now.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. All right. Well, let's get to the games that we have been playing. But first, I need to thank our sponsor, which is NordVPN. NordVPN, the VPN that I use. And no matter what you do online, you need the security and performance of a reliable VPN. Whether you've never used one before or you've tried a few, NordVPN has all the features, flexibility, and friendliness you could want. First off, you don't have to be a power user if that's what's turned you off in the past. Whether you're on a computer, on your phone, on a tablet, they have apps for Windows, for Android, for iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. All you got to do is sign in, and then a couple clicks later, you're good to go. One account is good for up to 6 different devices. And a lot of people use a VPN for watching movies or TV from a different region or in a different region if you're traveling. NordVPN makes that easy. Even if you're just watching a U.S. service from inside the U.S., NordVPN encrypts all your traffic so that your ISP can't throttle your bandwidth based on your content type, which happens to a lot of people. And if you're worried about what happens if the connection to NordVPN suddenly drops, you don't need to be, because NordVPN has an automatic kill switch that blocks your device from accessing the web while unprotected. Take back your peace of mind and use the web with freedom and security by using NordVPN. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/DLC. It'll get you a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and 4 months free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That is NordVPN, NordVPN.com/DLC for a huge discount and 4 months free. Once again, NordVPN.com/DLC. All right, Jeff, what is on your playlist this week?
Yeah, I finished Pentiment, and I love that game. What I like about it is it's one of these games that kind of plays you, where you're not really supposed to win Pentiment. You're not really supposed to solve the murders, which I guess people who don't know what Pentiment is, it's on Xbox Game Pass right now. It is from one of the main writers of Fallout New Vegas. It is a choose-your-own-adventure game, to put it, just to really reduce it down to its most basic elements. But and what it introduces is a couple of murders throughout that you're supposed to try to solve. But the point is not to be like, oh, I figured it out, and I'm the greatest detective in the history of mankind. No, you're supposed to learn about these characters and learn about the people in this world, which is early modern history, just right after medieval times. And there's a lot of change happening in the world, and you play as this artist that is working in an abbey, making books right as the printing press comes out, just like to really set the stage. And by the end, you have gone through the ringer with these characters, and a lot of twists and turns happen, and you don't feel satisfaction with any of the choices. I guess I didn't feel satisfaction. I don't know what other people are going to choose and whether or not it's more or less satisfying, but I wasn't happy with what I had done with this character. And it was awesome to live with that. And it was awesome to see the game knew I would feel that way. Mm. And then was presenting me with themes that were, enforced and then reinforced multiple times. You'd be like, yeah, you are dwelling on the past, and you should not be doing that. Look what happens to you if you dwell on the past too much. You need to build on the past. And Pentiment is about art being painted over. It's the old art being painted over with new art. That theme reiterated over and over across all kinds of different concepts, different people, different, you see the Roman ruins built on top of pagan ruins, and then there's a new city built on top of that. That's just like one example of that. But when you see characters dwell on that stuff too much and how it kind of makes them lose themselves, that's where the game's trying to get at. And it does so masterfully. It is so well done. I'm a huge fan of Pentiment. It's one of my favorite games of the year.
Really? Wow. I got to check this game out. I've been reading all these people praising it, and one theme, as you brought up, that shines through is this notion that, you know, when I was growing up playing video games as a young kid, a lot of what video games asked of you is to make choices and stick with them. And
yes,
you would lose out is maybe even not the right way to phrase it, but you would choose a pathway and there would be a road not taken.
Yes.
And it feels like these days, most mainstream games say, oh, here's a skill tree. Which skills do you want to do first? You're going to have plenty of skill points to get
it's all content
of
to be consumed eventually. Absolutely.
Yes.
This definitely pushes back against that, right? The game isn't content. It is art, right? To be, sort of floofy about it, but it is trying to say, no, having an option available, choosing a different option and having to live with that, it builds a bridge between you and the character, you and the world. And it gives you ownership of the story. And I really appreciate a game that knows that it's doing that. And I felt strongly going through it. It's like, no, I'm going to own these choices. And yeah, sometimes it does feel bad. Sometimes I felt real bad about the things I had my character do. Some things I did on stream, so it was a little bit more extreme than I might have done on my own. But it's pretty close to what I would have done. Or at least I would have been like, this is the option available to me, because I did not do all of the investigatory paths that I thought I did. And so I want to accuse somebody, and this person seems like they have means and motive and opportunity. I guess I'll recommend them. And then, okay, oh, they're hanging her. Okay. All right. Well, that's, I have to live with that now. And that stuff, it living with your choices is definitely one thing. And then the way they build on it, it's like, oh, it's not just like, oh, and we're going to make you feel bad because you're playing this game and you feel bad. There is a reason behind it in terms of the theming. And again, they just nail it.
Wow. Really, really cool game. I have to be honest, I'm a little off-put by the art style. I think it's a cool, big swing. Obviously, it's a really unique looking game, but I'm not drawn to that old,
Yeah, I think it's not an art style I ever would have thought would have made for a great game. It's not something that, like, occurs to me. Oh, yeah, the old, Illumination or Illuminated wood
manuscript
prints.
Manuscript
stuff, and it's definitely a play on those. It's not exactly like those, but it's a play on those concepts. I think even if it's off putting to you, I think if you give it an hour, and you'll either get past it or you'll learn to like it, and then you'll see the ways that it really fits the story and the way that they're trying to portray the meaning here. And they, obviously also it enabled them to make it on the cheap. There was like you know, four people at the start and like a dozen people when they were done. This is a game from Obsidian while they're off making like four or five other games. So it's kind of a miracle this thing even got done.
Yeah.
So I kind of appreciate a game that is that finds a way to will itself into existence, whether or not that means like, okay, you know, we can only make this with four or five people. What's an art style we could pull off? Well, this is one of them.
That's really cool. It's cool. It does feel like a labor of love.
Yes.
That definitely feels like that. And it's on Xbox Game Pass. What else is on your playlist?
Yeah, a couple other things. Atari 50. Have you guys tried this yet?
I have not.
So it's basically an interactive museum that is just perfect. It's so well done. I have a limited amount of love for Atari. It's definitely, you know, I was playing Atari games on the add-on for our ColecoVision before I got the Nintendo when I was five. Not a ton of love for Atari. This game, it's a collection of old Atari games. Really what it is, though, is a timeline of memorabilia, business cards, like the first business card for Syzygy, which is like the name of Atari before it changed to Atari, and then interviews with the people who were there telling the stories, you know, whether they are mythological at this point or not, still getting like 10 or 12 of them together all to tell the same story so you can hear the ways it's different. And it's just magic. It's so cool to get this history while we still can from the people who are really there. And it's presented in such a way that it's really easy to just consume. It's you'll get a paragraph about some little arcade cabinet that had it's called Ketchum or Grab'em or something. And it's a maze game and one character's pink and the other character's blue. And the thing you control it with is a pair of boobs because it's a sexy game. And it's like, well, they never actually ended up producing that way because that would have been too expensive. And it's like, of course. And it looks so stupid, but it's like, you get to get that history on it in like a paragraph or two, and then you move on immediately. And you might see some design documents for that thing, or you might see a video of someone talking about some other thing, or talking about how, oh, you know, what was drug use like in the office, and everyone telling conflicting stories about that. And the one guy who just doesn't care is like, yeah, we were all doing blow. And it's just, it's really, really fun. I cannot recommend it enough. I think it's, it is an example of where we should be headed with telling the history of games. I think documentaries are cool, and docudramas can be fine. We should be telling the history of games inside of games. And Digital Eclipse, the company that did this with the help of a lot of, you know, former journalists and people who care a lot about old games, all showing up and telling that history, it worked just magically.
That's
awesome. I think
awesome.
There's something fascinating about it too, where then you can go and play them. I think it lends itself to the medium of video games very well.
Absolutely.
Kind of like Cowabunga Collection, where you have, and some of these other good collections we've seen, where you can play it and experience it, and then within that, get that history around it, where it's like, yeah, watching the Hulu series is fun, but there's something really fascinating about having them describe a game, and then immediately you can jump in and play it, and then immediately jump out and pick up where you left off in the, you know, the history of the thing, I think is really, really cool, and something that's only really possible in, you know, in video games. And it's fun to see this stuff.
Collection was also Digital Eclipse. It's the same people. Yeah. So yes, it is. They found something that really works, and I'm just sort of begging the universe, I guess, like, do this with Sega, do this with, you know, Odyssey and Magnavox and a television, do it with Nintendo. If it's possible, do this with Nintendo. I would just die. I think that would be amazing.
I was traveling this weekend for the holidays. We went to Chicago as a family, and I got to meet up with our friend of the show, Danish Syed, and he took me to this place in Chicago called the Galloping Ghost Arcade.
Yeah,
which
I just went there a few weeks ago for Giant Bomb.
Are you been there?
Great. Yes, dude, we did a travel log of it. It's awesome.
Blew my mind. I think Danish is going to be on the Wednesday show, and we'll talk about it more on Pain DLC, but I'm very much in the headspace of having just been there. It's they say it is, if not the one of the biggest collections of arcade cabinets in the world. I think they have 851, yep. And it is massive. It's just this warehouse and just row row.
It's like a mini mall where they bought every single storefront and connected them. It's like that big. Like it's a whole strip mall on the side of the road. And imagine like if 5-6 stores in a strip mall were all owned by an arcade, and every single square inch was packed with an arcade machine.
Yeah. Because
that's how it is.
It's
every possible place they could put an arcade machine, it has an arcade machine.
That's and right.
It's
the and best. They're grouped together in genre and stuff. It'll have like all the Street Fighter cabinets next to each other, and like fighting game section, and like old shmups, and like it's so amazing to just walk down the aisles and see games I've never seen before, but so many. There's like, oh my God, I haven't thought about that game in 30, 40 years. It is a magical experience to see those old arcade cabinets like collected together like that and not done in a like flashy way. It's literally
it's just a
line of arcade cabinets. It makes me very much want to experience this Atari 50 thing, because I just was like, that nostalgia rush of seeing all these classic pieces of art, it was just such a special feeling. And it's awesome. As you said, it would be great if more companies got that treatment as well.
Yeah, the best thing about Galloping Ghost was reading about F-Zero AX, the arcade version of F-Zero GX, decades ago, never getting to play one, and then getting to sit down there and play it. And then as soon as I sit down, Josh Voidburger's quasi husband, who she works at Giant Bomb, he came there and helped film it for us. And we had a travelogue on the site. He handed me a GameCube memory card, which I got to put in the F-Zero AX machine. And it was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. That I remember getting so excited about the possibility of taking my save between the GameCube and the arcade. And of course, arcades were dying. I never got the chance to do that, except for I did at Galloping Ghost after driving for 5 hours. It was
amazing.
It was the best.
Christian, I know you and I have been to retro arcades in LA together a bunch of times. This is like a whole other level. And one of the smartest things they do at this place is they don't ask you to put coins in. You literally just pay an entrance fee, pay $25, and all the games are ready to go. You just push a button and you start playing. So you can play anything. You don't have to go like, oh, do I want to play this? Or do I want to play? Which one am I going to spend my quarter on? You're just a kid in a candy store and the candy is all free. I mean, you pay to get in, but it's amazing.
I'm on the other side of that. I'm on the other side of that literal coin. I maybe we'll talk about it more on Wednesday. I prefer quartering up because I think it changes the experience of how long, playing Turtles, the arcade game with unlimited lives, very different experience than you having $5. How far are you going to get? And so maybe from a nostalgia perspective of like go and tinker, maybe the free play is more exciting. But I think it's kind of the reason why some of those, because Xbox kind of tried to do that on the 360, right? You could have your arcade and you could get your games and you could just play them. In my opinion, most arcade games don't play well with unlimited plays. But I understand it from the nostalgia rush of like Homer in, Candyland, like, ooh, yeah, they have this and you jump over there and jump around.
It's the right way for Galloping Ghost with all those machines. Cause it's
the pure logistics of them, like emptying the coin slots. Yeah. Of that number of machines.
Honestly, it's probably the reason they do it. You're absolutely right. Like that, they'd have to pay some like multiple people full-time wages just to do that.
Anyway, that's Atari 50. What else is on your playlist?
Goat Simulator 3 is a ton of fun. I played a little bit of Goat Simulator 1. Like everybody, I streamed it a couple times. It's fun for that. We did a quick look on Giant Bomb for Goat Simulator 3, where I just started up and started playing with Jan over there. We were having a good time messing with each other. It's got great online features. It just sort of works. And we were having fun discovering all the things you could do, setting things on fire. I turned into a giraffe, and then Dan Reichert pops in without like being invited because we're friends. He just popped right online and just started harassing us. He had been playing for a lot longer. He was a shark with a dolphin face, and he had an old lady in a rocking chair on his back that was firing balls of yarn at us out of like a potato gun, and it would just keep knocking me over. And then I'm like eventually just running away from him. So he got a satellite dish on his back that he could zoop me up and then just shoot me out into the ocean. And it's just like nonstop madness, but it was so much fun. And the game lends itself to all those weird things. I put on the video of that for my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law when they were here, and they were just cracking up because it's just funny to see a giraffe limply rolling down the street for way longer than he should, because I'm just holding the button to keep him rolling and rolling and rolling, and then go out in the ocean and this limp giraffe is just like looking like Loch Ness, like the Loch Ness monster just chasing down another goat. That is what comedy is in video games. It is sort of Three Stooges slapstick, having like physics interact with mechanics in unexpected ways, and it is endlessly sort of fun. It's endless fun, I think, for viewing, and that's why it's so good as a streaming game. I bet it's gonna be endless fun for kids, and it's gonna be a couple of good sessions for I think most gamers, but still, it's Goat Simulator 3. Like, what else are you expecting? I think it's kind of nailing exactly what it's gonna go for.
Is it sort of kid friendly? I don't even know.
It's
yeah
it's the violence.
is not an 18 and over.
Yeah, it's not an 18 plus shooter like all the best games. It is sort of removed through at least a layer of abstraction where it all feels very cartoony. It can look realistic, but as soon as the physics, like the ragdolling kicks in, it's so absurd that it doesn't even look real anymore. My kids were watching it and they were also having a good time, and they weren't scared by the draft, like looking like he was basically dead. But to them, it didn't look like anything anymore. Right. It just looked like kind of silly. So yeah, it worked.
What is scary is when you turn around though, and you see the naked guy from It Follows standing on a roof and you're like, oh no, you know, I'm just kidding.
Well, that is Goat Simulator 3, and that's what Jeff Grubb has been playing. Christian Spicer, what's on your playlist?
This is a game that is an early access, also available on Xbox Game Pass. I'm going to pronounce it Lapin. Maybe there's a different way to say it, and maybe I should have taken the time to look up how other people have pronounced it, but I didn't because I was playing it. It is a precision platformer in the vein of a Celeste or an Ori.
Right. Which, I've been hearing about this. I'm very curious.
Folks know that I love both of those games. I'm a big Celeste fan. And I find it fascinating that when a game launches in early access, I always question how much I should play if I like it. You know, I'm like, ooh, this is good. Well, what's going to change? How far do I get? Will my save reset? Is this not the best version of it? Should I wait and save myself? So it is that 2D precision platforming style game. Very, from what I've played, I would say more similar to Celeste in terms of level progression than Ori, with a bunch of power-ups and skill trees and all of that stuff that kind of unlocks as you go. But the art style of Lapin is very, very stunning, especially when still. I think the animation for some stuff leaves a lot to be desired, but you play as this little bunny and you're leaving it just early game, quote unquote narrative. You have to leave your burrow because humans are developing in that area. So you have to leave your burrow, and it's kind of sad and melancholy, and you have to go out and explore the world. And there are times when it zooms in and it's got that, you know, Studio Ghibli or even like American Tale, like Don Bluth. Is that a Don Bluth films? Like, not quite, but it's at this painted, hand-drawn, animated aesthetic that is just, there's like kind of classical music playing in the background, and it is so beautiful to look at in those stills or with just like slight motion going by. And then I feel, from what I've played so far, where that kind of look maybe hurts it, or maybe it's the quality of the animation, is in that precision platforming. I feel as if my bunny has, and Alex Solman and I talked about this on some Feeling This episode, the idea of telegraphing your movement, where I feel like my bunny kind of has a not jumping and then full jump. You know, it's in its full jump pose, and I can't quite tell how far I'm flying over the platform based on how my character is reacting. But it's got all the stuff that I like, all that catnip of, you know, clinging onto a wall for a short amount of time as you slide down it. Then you can jump off the wall. Oftentimes, it's most levels or engagements are single screens as you're kind of progressing toward a thing. And it's a one hit kill a la Super Meat Boy or something like that. But a very quick reloads you back at the bottom of that screen. So it's not back at the beginning of a level or a whole engagement. You're trying to get to this collectible at the top right of the screen, per se, and you got to jump over these thorns and these bottomless pits to get there. And if you miss and you fall, quickly fades and you're right back where you started and you get to do that engagement again. The things that I think are holding it back are, as I mentioned, that animation and then some of the stuff in the levels themselves. There are like swinging platforms that very much look like stills just kind of moving through a platform or moving through the space, which for whatever reason throws me for a bit of like, when do I jump on that? Is that a thing that I'm engaging with, or is it just part of background scenery? There's just some little things like that that I think could use a little more polish, and perhaps that's why it's in an early access that I think would make the act of doing a little more rewarding. And then the music is also very chill. Like, there were moments where I couldn't quite figure out this jump, and it was still just like, and I'm, you know, gripping my controller too hard as I can't jump over these thorns. And it doesn't have that thrust of Celeste's score that really would amp up, or Ori in the middle of a chase as the the music gets high. So I'm very curious to see what Enlapin changes between now and release and what is being fine-tuned and kind of what remains the same. But if you are looking for a Meat Boy, Celeste, that kind of difficult platforming, challenging gameplay, I think it's easy to recommend as one of the best of the genre. It's not there yet, but I think it's, I always like jumping into those style of games and seeing what's new and how they're evolving that or kind of playing into that. And ultimately it comes down to level design, right? So hopefully as this game goes into full release, it'll have that flow state that these games can hit. It's really pretty and fun to look at.
And it's, I think it's cool that Game Pass is having these early access games more and more. I like that trend.
Yeah, me too. I love early access. I think it's been really important to gaming for a long time, even before it had a name. Kerbal Space Program was early access. There was no Steam early access at that point. And it's like, yeah, games need this. And I'm sort of the opposite of you, Christian, where I like playing early access games and seeing how, like, not just seeing how things change, but having that experience of having things change from underneath me. Because it's like, oh, man, I got to have this relationship with this game when it was something different. And now it's this. And I'll always have that. That will always be magical. And I guess Dead Cells did this better, where you can go back and play those other old versions of the game. They enable you to download any update that they've done so far. And I think that's something every game should do. And I'm looking at this, and I'm 100% going to hop in here. I love the Celeste Meat Boy genre, and I think this game is gorgeous looking. This looks so cool. So yeah, I'm gonna be playing this real soon.
Yeah, and I love seeing a gorgeous game that is a different art style as well. Like, yes, there are a lot of these gorgeous platformers, and it's like, oh, well, we've done pixel graphics to death, or we've done this aesthetic to death. And this game, from all accounts, seems wholesome. And cheer, I'm sure there's something awful coming with the humans and what development means and dead bunnies that we'll find somewhere. But from the outset, it's very cheery and very kid appropriate. I guess the only other knock I'll have on it is that the plot so far isn't really grabbing me, and some of the chatting can seem longer than I want it to. I think kind of like Ollie Ollie World, a game I truly adore and I will also, you know, put in this genre in some form or fashion. But like, I just did not, I never really cared about those characters and the conversations. And here in Lapin, the bunnies will be like, oh, did you build this thing? We did build this thing. I built it back then and I was going to build it then. Did you ever? And I'm just like, I don't care. I want to jump over these thorns as I bang my microphone.
Yep.
But definitely worth checking out. And I also agree, Jeff, that I love early access on console, and it's maybe more commonplace now, but for the longest time, it was locked behind PC gaming. And I think it's good to see more of this happening and on smaller games too.
And with Game Pass, you can jump into these for what is ostensibly free. You know, you can try out these games for free. I think it's so cool that they're doing that.
Yeah, agreed.
I have a number of indie games on my playlist this week as well. I checked out some games that I came away really positive on, all of them, actually. Soccer Story is a game that should be out by the time you hear this episode. I think it's coming out in a day or so. And this is not a sequel to Golf Story. It has nothing to do with Golf Story, but it is certainly familiar to those who enjoyed Golf Story. Obviously different sports, but similar idea of sort of role-playing gamification to a sport. And you play as a little character in a world where there was this massive calamity and all soccer was eliminated from the world, except for it's controlled by one terrible organization called FIFA. No, not FIFA. but it is clearly an analog to FIFA, and there's no shortage of little snide references, which I appreciated. I'm not a huge
FIFA. FIFA has not been embroiled in a single scandal in the last.
Yeah, let's check our watch here.
10 minutes. Yeah. So
you've been doing the show the last 10 minutes, Christian. How can you be sure? So, you know, it's a send up of that. And the writing is cute and fun. And I think it has a lot of wink, nudge, nudge, which I enjoy. And I enjoy the art style in this game as well. It is really interesting. It's pixelated characters in a voxel world with sort of hand-drawn, really crisp art overlays. So like anytime text or menus or overlays will happen, it's very crisp and beautiful and almost animated, hand animated style. But the game itself, the characters are like these 2D sprites
And then the world is 3D voxels. And I've never really seen that like triple mashup before. And it works really well. It's a very attractive game to look at. And basically what you're doing throughout the game is using your magic soccer ball that you would acquire to interact with the world in various ways. Those various ways include kicking the soccer ball at things. and there are little puzzles and quests you'll get to upgrade your skills. You acquire a team right at the beginning of the game of other soccer players and like a panda. I don't know why.
Well, yeah, why not?
He's the captain of the team. He's like he's your goalie.
I love that.
The panda's got to be the goalie. Absolutely. And you can level up there. You know, they have attribute speed and all the, you know, different attributes. And you get, you know, little special moves that you can do in role-playing game style. And basically, you're moving around the world and, like, finding little targets to kick the ball at. Or my favorite of them is finding goal goal posts that are hidden in the world that are made out of, you know, paint or, you know,
oh, fun.
Architecture of the world is like formed in the right particular way to make a goal. And you discover it. And if you kick the ball through the goal, you get, you know, you points.
Oh, I love
or you
that.
Get to, you know, quest. You solve the quest. So lots of fun little stuff like that. And I thought going in that it was going to be more traditional role-playing game in that I was going to have battles all the time and I was going to have to do soccer battles or something. But there's basically no combat at all in the game. Ultimately, when you get to the end of a major section of the game, you have a soccer match, which is like a timed soccer match against – it basically is a boss battle, but it's a soccer game. But they're very rare. They're not – it's not like the common fight that you'll have. It's like the end of a section of the game and you have the – it all leads up to the soccer match. And so you level up your characters to get ready for it. And the first one that you get to is – you know, you have to do a lot of stuff to get to it. And the first one is like, okay, you're gonna play against the toddlers. Like, literally, you're gonna play against the toddlers. And the first time I played against the toddlers, I lost 8-1.
And I was like, you kicked the ball and took a toddler with it and like shot it in the space.
The game sets it up like, okay, we'll give you the training wheels, introductory tutorial, soccer match. You're going to play against the toddlers. I was like, okay, you yawn. And then they schooled me 8-1. I was like, oh, this is serious.
And because toddlers don't play a position. You know, it's just mob.
Right. Yeah,
they will. Back. You're just, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of that, like, would you rather fight one giant duck or 100 mini ducks? You know. Anyway, I found the actual soccer. I mean, I'm not a FIFA player. I don't play the FIFA games every year. I'm not a... you know, huge soccer nut or anything like that. And it is very much an arcadey, it's like, you know, NHL on the Genesis. You know, it's like an old school, like NES arcade soccer game where you're just knocking people down and taking the ball. And you have like three things you can do: pass, slide and tackle, or shoot a goal. So there's very little nuance. And ultimately, that would be my biggest complaint, is that in the actual soccer matches, I wish there was more nuance, more options, more subtlety to the game. But I think the majority of the things you do in the game isn't playing soccer. Your majority of what you're doing is investigating the world and kicking the ball through things and all that stuff is delightful. So I like Soccer Story, and I think people will enjoy it. If you like games like Golf Story and if you like soccer, I think it'll be an interesting game. I hesitate to recommend it to folks that are like really into FIFA, because I think it's a very simplified version of actual soccer is the downside.
I love Golf Story. I have a code for this. I'm going to be checking it out. But it's just the idea that, okay, yeah, everything is soccer. That's what they do. That's what they did in Golf Story. I'm like, okay, they know what they're doing here, and I'm excited about that.
There's also sort of a nod to Golf Story in the game. You unlock like a foot golf mini game where you're playing golf, but you're playing it with a soccer
ball.
Incredible.
Okay, that's pretty very cute. Good.
Awesome. Yeah. Also, great game to play on the Steam Deck. I mostly played it when I was traveling. It is perfect for that.
Awesome.
Another game I played on my Steam Deck is called Bravery and Greed. I talked about this one, I think one of the Steam demo weeks, whatever that was called, when they were doing a bunch of Steam demos. And I was drawn to it again. I still really like this game. It's sort of, I sort of describe it as Rogue Legacy with multiplayer, with slightly more sort of role-playing game stuff. It's not quite as good as Rogue Legacy, in my opinion, but it's fun. And the classes play very differently from one another. I mean, it's a 2D action platformer. You select a class at the beginning, you know, the wizard and sword and shield character, two-handed sword character, assassin. And they all have very, very different move sets. In fact, the wizard like can summon an elemental and then you control the elemental. It's really very, very different. And a lot of the characters are very different. I think the game is pretty, is very much a roguelite. You're doing these runs and there's five big dungeons and you're trying to accomplish thing. And it can play with up to four people in co-op. I have not done that yet. I want to, but it is very chaotic on the screen when that happens. So I don't know how much that'll detract from it, but I like Bravery and Greed a lot. And again, it plays great on the Steam Deck. I'm enjoying it. I've just kind of started into it and I recommend it. The final game that I will mention is, I think, my favorite of the three, and it is called Ship of Fools. This I'm playing on PlayStation 5. I got a code for it on PlayStation 5. This game has single-handedly gotten me to buy a second DualSense controller.
Okay.
Yeah. I think my son is going to love playing this with me. And I was like, I think this game is built for co-op. I've been playing it solo. You certainly can play it solo. This is another roguelite. but it is the central dynamic is very similar to a game called, I should have looked it up. Love in a Time of Space Time? What's that
called?
Love
in a Dangerous Space Time, or is it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you remember that game, it's a game I really enjoyed. Basically, it is, you know, it's like
Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time.
Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Great game. Or another reference would be like Overcooked. Basically, any of those games where you and somebody else are, you're trying to do 1,000 things at once, and you can only do maybe 2 or 3 of them at once. And that's the fun. The fun is being slowly overwhelmed by the number of things you have to do at any given time. And like Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time, Ship of Fools is going out into scary places. In this case, you are on a ship that you have. You go out into these different tiles, very much a roguelite. Like there's a map that has different tiles. You select which tile you want to go to. There is going to be an encounter on that tile. Some of the tiles will give you treasure. Some of the tiles will be a boss battle, whatever it is.
Like FTL, yeah.
Yeah, like FTL or, you know, any.
A million others, really, yeah.
At this point. And so you have these cannons on your little ship. You can man the cannon. There's, for solo mode at least, I don't know if it is there in co-op mode, but one of the cannons will auto-fire. But you have to physically load the ammo into it. There's different types of ammo you can find and acquire and get and buy. You can load out your ship in various ways with different kinds of weaponry you get over time. And there's monsters that come and you can smack them with your little oar when you run up to them. But most of the time they're far enough away that you have to man the cannon, shoot, shoot, shoot. Oh, I'm out of ammo. Run over to your ammo thing. Pick up the ammo, plop it into the cannon. Shoot, shoot, shoot. Oh no, they're on a different side. Run over to the other side. It is just that like chaotic, wild, slowly overwhelmed as the things are on all sides of you. And you're, you know, part of the fun is, oh, I accidentally dropped the ammo over the side of the ship instead of putting it into the cannon. It's just that like, you know, spinning plates. Very fun, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful game. I mean, gorgeous. It looks like a Saturday morning cartoon, this game. It is stunning to look at. Charming, fun, great little upgrade paths. You know, you're doing these runs as far as you can get across the map, you know, but until you're completely overwhelmed and your ship is sunk. And you can repair the ship in real time. And you got to shoot a harpoon off the side to get a plank that's floating in the water so you can pull it on board and use that plank to repair your ship. And it's just chaos. But it's delightful chaos. And I really want to play it with my son because I think he's going to have a blast. Us, you know, talking to each other. You gotta go get to the north top side. I'm gonna be the bottom side. I think it's that kind of goofy fun, and I'm having a great time. And it's like it's $14, I think $15 just a great little game, Ship of Fools.
It's two player, right? So when you say it's multiplayer, like it's two player cooperative. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And, two people on the cool. on the boat at any given time.
I think I'm like going to see if we're going to do a quick look at this week, because that sounds like a perfect game to play on Giant Bomb. So.
Oh yeah, I think it's going to be great for streamers, because it is literally just how long can you last before you're overwhelmed by the nuttiness, you know?
Yes, I love those kinds of games. This one seems like it looks really nice. You're right. The graphic style is very, very sharp.
Yeah. And I love how it's animated. Everything moves in this like herky jerky, very Saturday morning cartoon style. It's,
like on the twos or something? Like animated on the twos?
Sort of? Yeah, animated on the twos. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the jazz of animation.
Yeah. It's the frames you don't animate, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, that is Ship of Fools, Bravery and Greed, and Soccer Story on my playlist. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. Jeff Grubb, it's always so much fun to have you on the show and chat. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. This is great, guys. I really do appreciate it. I listen all the time. You guys do a great show. This is fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the stuff that you do online.
Yeah. Giant Bomb mostly these days, giantbomb.com. I also have my own podcast, but basically if you go to gamemess.net, that'll take you to my Discord. It's a great community. We all hang out there. But we have our podcast producers there that give us some ideas and stuff like that. But you can just come there, join for free, come hang out, and then you can find all my stuff there as well. But yeah, go to Giant Bomb. I guess the thing right now is we're playing Bubsy 3D. I'm playing Bubsy 3D as part of our thing called Blight Club, where we play really bad games. And Dan got the voice actress for Bubsy to record lines, basically just yelling at me personally. So he plays those while we're playing, and it's just a nightmare. It's truly awful. And I kind of, if you want to see me be miserable, it's a great way to do it. That game is rough stuff, but yeah, I'm playing through that. Be doing that again live this Thursday.
Amazing. I think I saw you on your Twitter feed of a Bubsy Christmas ornament.
Someone photoshopped that in there, because now apparently Bubsy's going to be my thing. So here we go. That's the rest of my life. Just Bubsy everywhere.
Bubsy Grub.
Yeah, it's called Grubsy 3D. Yes. And that was actually the whole idea. Like, that rhymes. We should just play that. I'm like, maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we shouldn't do that. But here I am.
Amazing. Christian Spicer, what do you got going on this week?
Not playing Bubsy. That is always my favorite thing of those things, is that fans come out of the woodwork, right? And they will make it your thing. Like, no, it's good if you just, and it's like, I get it. I'm not yucking your yum, but it's not my thing. It's not my thing.
I have no say in it, it feels like. And it's like, all right, fine, here we go.
It could be your thing. For folks that want to get in touch with me, the best way is on this show's Discord. I still am on Twitter at Spicer. I was one of those people that was like, oh, I guess we're all on Hive now. I guess that's the thing. So I'm there at Christian Spicer, because I'm the guy who wants to have a slightly different handle on every social. Like, you know,
it makes it easy for
people. Yeah, keep you on your toes.
Yeah. Instagram, I think I still technically have an account, and it's Christian_Spicer. I need to have just like a better handle that no one ever wants, but like my Twitter one's pretty good as just my last name, but it's also, you know, I guess attractive enough that I'm like, oh, I'll log onto this new thing. No one else has that. And it's like, it's been taken by 800 people already. You could be Spicer 801 if you want it. Real cool. And then I launched my new site. My new site is up, which is just christianspicer.com. I'll be doing micro blogging there as well. So you can go and check that out. That's where, like, when embargo things hit and we can't talk about it, you know, it's between shows, I'll post my quick thoughts there over at my website. You can find those there. And then my newsletter, which I stumbled through it because I haven't sent one in a long time. I've been bad. You can subscribe to for free at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. And then also this very show, feeling this, Jeff, we got a new one on Friday. The Jet Set we did last Friday was Jet Set Radio, and people seem to really love that. That's been awesome to see that feedback. And it's been fun seeing people. Alex Solman and I did an episode on Active Reload, and that kind of then became a broader discussion about QuickTime events, because they have this negative connotation of like, oh, a QTE is crappy. And it's like, but everybody loves Active Reload. And that's just a really well-timed QTE in the middle of something else. And it's been fun seeing people from that episode going back and revisiting the Gears franchise. And those episodes drop for patrons on Fridays.
That's right. Patrons at any level. Patreon.com/DLCpod. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Canato, which is spelled with two N's and one T. Again, you can write to us here on the show, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. And I have several other shows you could check out, including the Filmcast, which is about movies and TV shows. We Have Concerns is a comedy science show I do with Anthony Carboni. Find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And I do a sports show called The Fan Controlled Show. Actually, the title changes every week because it's fan controlled. And you can find that on twitch.tv/fancontrolledsports or on YouTube or as a podcast as well. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Jeff, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I was like, oh, I'm done with Star Wars after The Rise of Skywalker. And then Andor came out and showed me that I'm a true liar. I'm a despicable liar because, boy, Andor is just the best thing that's ever happened, period. Oh, it's so good.
So good.
It's so good. Obviously recommend Andor, but I've been getting into the High Republic books that they've been putting out. And it's like, oh, yeah, of course they were doing interesting stuff with Star Wars. They're just doing it off in this little side thing. Where they're not afraid to be a little bit less commercial, and they can have Jedi that are a little bit more complicated and stuff like that. And it's all happening in the High Republic. I've read the first book, and I'm in the middle of reading the second one. And in between there's a couple of like side stories and junior novels and stuff like that I dipped into a little bit. But the main novels so far have been really good. I think they're both have been written by Kevin Scott. I think that's right. Check those out. I really kind of can't recommend them enough. They are very well done take on, okay, yeah, this is the height of the Republic. This is the height of the Jedi Order. What problems would they be facing? And they do a good job of positioning these characters in interesting ways without having to be like, and now the Sith are attacking again. There's a whole kind of new enemy that is interesting in its own way. And actually they're called the Nihil. They're nihilists. And it's like, oh, this feels familiar in terms of our times, and in the same way that Andor has been commentating on our times through its own way. It's not as incisive as Andor. Nothing is, but it's still pretty good stuff. And I really recommend it.
Is it take place like hundreds of years before the Skywalker? Hundreds.
Yoda is pretty young is where it's at. Mm. Everyone else hasn't been born yet. Yoda's there, but he's pretty young. He is on the Jedi Council, but it's still like his early days. He's like 100 years old instead of 800 years old, I think.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. High Republic books. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Well, I'll give a quick second to those young adult books, especially if you have young adults in your life. They are a good jumping on point, and they don't require tons of prior Star Wars knowledge. And they, I think, take to the more recent lineage of young adult fantasy books where, like, stuff happens. Characters die. Like, there's like actual stakes, but it's still light enough that. But like early on, it's like, oh, yeah, this thing blew up. What happened to Timmy? Timmy's dead. Yep. You idiot. You thought you liked Timmy. This is a YA book, but Timmy's gone. We got to move on.
They play with emotions in really strong ways. I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. They're fun. My parting gift for this week will be, as we are now, you know, it's after Thanksgiving. It is Christmas. I mean, it was apparently Christmas on July 5th is apparently the way the world works. After 4th of July, it becomes Christmas. But I would encourage listeners, if they're in that spirit, to fold one new Christmas song into their rotation, like new from the last 5 years is all. Or like if you haven't added Kelly Clarkson's Christmas hits, which are older than 5 years old, if you haven't folded those into the rotation, get on them. They're great. The Linda Lindas, I've talked a lot about just in general on the course of this show. They have a Christmas song out, Groovy Xmas. Find that one, because I think Christmas playlists can get stagnant and stale with great. I mean, just hits, right? Like, bangers from all the classics, but new great bands are still making Christmas songs. So go find that one new song. The first time you hear it, you'll be like, it's not as good as this, that, or the other, but it will be the third year, because that's how they get you. They're all little earworms. You got to fold one in now, and then pretty soon it'll be your favorite. So look to add a new song to your Christmas playlist.
That was one of my favorite things about the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special, is that like, it's wall-to-wall Christmas songs almost none of them I'd ever heard before. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's pretty well done. Pretty well done.
Yeah, I think
the bands haven't stopped making them. And 80s yeah. bands made a bunch of them. New Kids on the Block did a whole album back in the day.
I think one was a cover of the Jimmy Fallon Christmas song that they did on SNL where they're all dancing and looking at it. I'm pretty sure that was one they did in that Guardians short. So I'm like, that's pretty cool. I'm actually going to like try to find that. I like watched the credits waiting for that to pop up and I missed it. So I'm like, I'll have to actually see if I can find that recording because I would like to fold that in there. It's older than 5 years ago now, but still I'm gonna consider that my new one for this year.
Yeah, you hear like the same 10 songs.
It's an expansion. I'll count it, Jeff. Exactly. So it's DLC for
yeah.
My parting gift is not Christmas themed, but it is a movie that is, I think, available wider to the world now. I talked about it on the Filmcast a while back, but it's one that you shouldn't miss. If you love quirky, interesting, fun, weird movies, Triangle of Sadness, which is a title that would have put me off. I don't want to watch the sad movie. It's not sad. It's the title has nothing to do with the content of the movie. But I would suggest, if you trust me on gun movie suggestions, go into this one without knowing anything about it, because you will be taken on a ride, my friends. It is where you start in this movie is very different than where you end. And I really loved it. Is a movie that I challenge you to predict where it's going. It is quite an unexpected journey that Triangle of Sadness takes. I found it delightful, very, very funny, darkly funny, but funny nonetheless, and a wonderful commentary on the world, and just it's an incredible ride. So check out Triangle of Sadness if you can find it. I think it might be on demand now, or certainly expanding to more theaters than it was originally. So seek it out. All right. We also got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Comes from Andy, who writes, "Hey guys, love the show. Been listening for a year or so. Always excited to get your nuggets of gaming wisdom and random ramblings on the midweek Patreon show. I thought I'd suggest a parting gift. I'm sure many people are like me in that they get home from work, sit at their desk to play games, and are suddenly overcome with decision paralysis and have no idea what game to play." He said, insert too many games jingle here. There you go. Well, here's something to make it worse. I recently installed Opera GX, a gaming-focused web browser, to find an absolute ton of indie games built right in. A smorgasbord of retro-style, chiptune-riddled browser games. Anything from racing games, shooters, roguelikes, dungeon crawlers, and even Vampire Survivor likes. Thought I'd pass this along for anyone else looking to fill 30 minutes at lunch or just sit back and chill to some cool little indie games that run without the need for one of those expensive beefy GPs. As an added bonus, the browser homepage has a built-in game release schedule. It plays chill music while you browse the web and has great integration for apps like Discord so you can chat with friends from the browser. Never for the life of me thought I'd install an Opera web browser, but hey, this one seems great. Anyway, keep up the great work. Cheers, Andy. Thank you, Andy.
This is my, I've made this joke a bunch of times on my stuff, but when I talk about the gamer browser, if anyone's coming here to listen to me, this is the browser I'm talking about.
Really?
I'm like, let me consult the gamer browser. And I go and look at the release calendar and stuff like that. So it's, I just have it open as my secondary one for like routing my audio for different, doing different shows. Like I'll put all my major stuff in Edge. I use Edge now. And then for everything else, I'll do it in Opera. Like if I need to bring up a video during the show, it'll be in Opera. But I'm like, oh yeah, this is an easy one that was just in the Microsoft Windows Store. I installed it. It was no problem. And then I'm like, oh, it does have kind of some cool features. It does have all these games and this release calendar just on this tab constantly. It's kind of useful for my job. So that's a good recommendation. That's pretty funny. I'm glad that that got mentioned on the episode that I was on.
Well done, Andy. Very cool. If you'd like to be like Andy and have your recommendation read on the show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Jeff Grubb and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those great bumpers. Our theme song is by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. Thank you to each and every one of you for downloading and listening to the show. Thanks especially to our patrons and our top tier patrons, our hype train level patrons. They get their names read out at the end of every episode. which I'm going to do right now.
That's right. It's time for me to thank our Hype Train patrons. Patrons like Brian Yordan, Hyperboy66, Scott Lambert, Shoryuken, comedian Aaron Trahan, David Epp, John Sisko, Curtis from Louisville, Relentless Rex, Michael S., Andy Joyce, Matt Valdez, John Sisko, Kyle Starr, Anthony Gulas, Riley Knox, Rob Rickman, Dan Flanagan, Sasan, Hank Patton, Cheesy Bob, Adam Denby, Victor Valenzuela, Scooby Diesel, Jonathan Talbert, Chris Zacharias, Matt Bradley, Jeff Luxack, Mitchell Ness, John Putney, Will with 1L Harris, Jimmy Radcliffe, Malcolm King, Mark Dowland, Dan Palmino, Scott Hughes, Stu Goss, Ben, Jenny, Nate, Kevin Brazel, Yick, Zachary White, Albert of the Stuff and Junk Show Podcast, Jonathan Spiceman Forever Schlepfer, Soren Silk, Mike Lombardo, The Spiceman Silencer, Michael Buck, Travis Jackson, Michael Stadler, Nick Strauss-Klein, Jad, Peter Olber, Josh Peek, Christian Bravery, and Taylor Wiggert, Octavian Retsier, Jason Novak. Thank you to all our Hype Train patrons for making this show possible.
All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.